You're listening to the Just Giants podcast with Grump and the Cranky Fan.
Be sure to listen for free on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Podbean.
Welcome back to Just Giants with Grump and the Cranky Fan, the best damn podcast for the best damn football team. I'm your host, the Football Grump. With me, as always, is Mike the Cranky Fan. And welcome back. How's it going, Cranky?
Hey, Grump. Good. I still have my Eclipse glasses on because I don't want to look directly at this roster with the naked eye. So I figured it'd be safer if we did this analysis with our safety glasses on.
Well,
how are you, Grump?
I'm good. I'm taking mine off. I can't see a damn thing.
Yeah.
They work too well. They work too well for what they are supposed to do. Did you actually watch the eclipse? Yeah,
it was pretty awesome. We were on the west side of Manhattan up at Pier 57 and went through the whole thing. And it was cool because I'm sure you guys all felt the same thing, but it got cold as it was happening. You could definitely feel how the temperature changed. And, you know, obviously we were not in locations where you got the total blackout. Oh, we do had some cousins out in Illinois and stuff where they had black to the point they could see stars. So
Cool, that's awesome. Did you ask them that?
They sent pictures. Weren't you on that? I thought you were on that text chain about it. No, but
nope.
It was awesome. The next one's in 2045, right through Tampa Bay. So by then I'll be a retired geezer going to Rays games and I'll be able to see a total eclipse.
Total eclipse of the heart. No.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I watched that from my porch. It was interesting. Here, I would say, it got cold, but it was like more than anything, it was just like twilight, kind of suddenly. With the glasses on, you could see kind of everything happening.
It was pretty amazing. Like there was a little bit of cloud cover, but it kind of went away, and it was just like, you know, you see this thing coming, you know, and awesome.
Yeah, it's like cool, you know what I mean? Scientifically, like knowing what's going on and all that is like really interesting. Watching it is cool. And then it's kind of just like watching the ball drop on New Year's. You know what I mean? Like it's sort of it is interesting, but it's not exactly must-see TV in the way that we're used to.
The next time if you're in the path of the totality, that was going to be cool. I'm looking forward to that. I already have it in my my Outlook calendar for 2045 to make sure I don't have any meetings that day.
Yeah,
so I'm all sure prepared.
Can't cancel everything. And you know, in the same way that like the whole solar eclipse wasn't really like must-see TV. Neither is this Giants roster.
I was going to say, I feel a segue coming on.
You know, when you look back at last year's season, a lot of it kind of feels like, you know, we talk about it, right? Like when you look back at the last year, it's like, shucks, right? Like, they kind of took a gamble. Things immediately didn't work out, but they didn't work out in the worst possible way. You have Andrew Thomas getting hurt. The season kind of went off the rails like immediately. And you look back and you're like, man, if only that didn't happen. And it makes you kind of feel like the strengths of the team, you know, just need another shot at everything. And the wide receiver group is not a strength of the team, is it?
No, you know, it's interesting you say that. Like, to me, the Andrew Thomas injury and then the Daniel Jones injury was kind of like put the season on asterisk, but it also kind of let you overlook either just the of this team or the problems that this team have. You know, you can't just dismiss it as, oh, this team won 11 wins the last year, and just because there's some injuries, we're right where we are. No, there are problems. And, you know, some of it is obvious deficiencies, their depth issues, but you know, one of the most important positions in a league where passing is more and more important, you know, our wide receiver room is just really a collection of guys, a collection of wide receiver, I'm going to say maybe two, but probably wide receiver threes are just, they're just there. And you know, we'll go through each of these people. You know, some people I have a little better opinion than I did the year before, but if I'm looking comparing us to like an elite Super Bowl contending team, I don't see many starters on those teams that would be culled from this wide receiver room.
So, in that manner, let's go through them one by one, because it's important to know what you're dealing with here.
Yes.
So, I'm gonna start right off with Darius Slayton because he's the most expensive. Although he's not really that expensive, he is in the final year of his contract. It's hard to say that he is anything less than good for now when you look at statistically how he's pretty much led the wide receiver group since he's been here, just about. He is, by all accounts, not overly impressive or elite, and yet he's never really had someone so talented opposite of him that, like, there's definitely times where he's kind of the number one threat on the team, with the exception of Saquon Barkley, and he still managed to gain yards. Like, there is something about him that is impressive beyond the traits, you know, like where he is otherwise unspectacular.
Yeah, I mean, there's something that he said. If you are identified as the guy, and in this wide receiver room with this offense, he was kind of the guy. And this is somebody that for the past couple of years, I've shit on. I have not been a fan. I didn't like his inconsistency. I didn't like his inability to make big plays and big opportunities.
Which is
And
fair.
yeah,
I mean,
he's
it's
one
not
of
like
those
that
like,
opinion came out of nowhere.
no. And I complained about him a lot. And again, put ourselves in the position 12 months ago, if we would have done this exercise, I would probably would have had him as a move on. Like, I can't take the swings and I need more consistency. And he actually played, I think, to the top level of his ability. But again, if we have a true wide receiver one and we have a true wide receiver two, he's at best the third guy. And for that, he's just a good for now guy for me. I mean, his contract is up this year and it's time to to re-sign him, I'm not paying big bucks for him. I don't even know if I'm bringing him back. But for this year coming up, I'm fine with him for as he is, but hopefully we are going to upgrade around him.
So, I mean, like, here's the thing. Take our Giants colored glasses off for 5 minutes and look at Darius Slayton as a potential free agent next year. If I'm a team, as you are saying, like, who's got a really strong number one, a really strong number two, but the number three position just doesn't deliver, he's worth spending money on, right? Like, say you're the Rams, say you're the Eagles, you're another franchise that's closer to winning, and you need a third. I mean, the Eagles, I say that and I throw up in my mouth, but that's actually a solid fit.
Right. But I guess what would they spend on him though? Like,
Well, I
if you're
mean,
to pay
like I
wide
said, like,
receivers.
forget cap space and specific teams. Like, he's just, I'm just saying, like, they're gonna offer, winning teams are gonna offer him what they can offer, and then also say to him, but we're so close to winning, you can win here. You know what I mean? So, like, the money isn't the point. My point is, he is worth spending money on to certain franchises, looking for exactly what you described, right? Yeah.
Looking for a good wide receiver three, somebody that puts pressure on a nickel corner or can get in a seam and do some stuff. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's not going to break anybody's bank, but that's fine. That's his kind of what his role in this league really is. Now, will a shitty team pay extra to make him a wide receiver one?
Also possible, yes.
You could see a team that just has nothing and just like. He can make the big play. He can do things. That's possible too. I mean, it's ultimately, I think we see what happens in this draft before we make any decisions about him going forward. But for me,
Oh, yeah.
just on talent and ability wise and age and all this stuff, to me, he's nothing more, nothing less than a good for now guy.
Right, and I think, you know, as a guy, seems like a decent guy. Never like any sort of issue in the locker room, anything like that. Seems to be a sponge learner. Sticks up for Daniel Jones and stuff, you know, whatever. But
Is he the longest tenured giant now?
I think at this point, yeah, he might be.
I think so. Yeah. That's saying something.
He came in the same year as Jones, though, right? I'm pretty sure. Which I think Jones is technically, because he was a day one pick, is a longer tenure. Although I guess it depends on when they sign their deals, right?
That's true, yeah. But the point being...
That's how sad our roster situation is. Yeah, I mean, but here's the thing, right? Like, with Slayton, next year, I think he's probably going to make money and not be on this roster, and I'd be happy for him.
Agreed.
Would be a great third on this roster. It would be great to have him here for his career and all that other stuff, because he is a good dude, I think. All that stuff I said before. Nevertheless, I would want the best for him, and I think, honestly, what he is capable of achieving would be to make a very sizable amount of money, to me anyway, to play somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Moving forward, next is Wandale Robinson, signed through 2025. You know, little asterisk for Wandale Robinson having the ACL halfway through one of his years. I still think that he's like a lowercase build around. It's a little difficult to say, but like we've gotten flashes of his game breaking ability. But I mean, when you really take into account the sample size, it's hard to be critical of the fact that it's only been flashes. We've gotten half of a rookie year and then an entire sophomore campaign that was just an absolute disaster. But still, I think that they drafted him for a purpose. I think that he's got a very special skill set of you know, being disruptive and getting chunk yards, being a chain mover, and being a bit of a gadget player as well. I think that he's a build-around guy for at least the time being.
I agree. To me, he's the PG version of a Kadarius Toney, the guy they wanted to bring in. You know, he's the guy, like you said, less of a distraction, lesser of an injury problem. He's not been brought in here to be a wide receiver one. He's been brought in here to be like a, you know, a change of pace guy, a complement to, you know, other pieces around him. Still early stages of his contract. I think if the situation changes, if we have stability at, you know, quarterback, we have stability with the offensive line, we get that wide receiver one, we get other pieces. I think he's a nice complimentary selection on this team and piece on this team. So I have in, you know, pencil build around, not that he's my franchise guy, but he's a piece that I want to, because of the age, because of the money and all that stuff, someone that I like to keep around here through at least this contract and see what happens. You know, we could always reassess, you know, when it's contract time, but for right now, we have to have a discussion with him. So I think he's somebody that I think we're still scrapping the surface of what he can provide to this team, with expectations, you know, kind of tempered. I'm not expecting to have, you know, the second coming to this team.
So here's the other thing about Wandale, like one more little caveat to him. You know, I've said that I think he's a build around guy. That being said, his skill set is special, but as the league becomes, it just changes over time. Guys like him are becoming more and more common. I think that like 10 years ago, a guy like Wandale, I mean, like the only guy I can really think of that was like, this was like Wes Welker or something like that. You know what I mean? And he was like an absolute game breaker. Maybe 10 years ago was pushing.
And even that's a little different too. Welker wasn't as like, he wasn't as twitchy as a guy like Wandale.
Not quite, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like it didn't seem like guys like him existed, the same way they do now, where they're just everywhere. All these like guys that are like under 6 feet and just really, really twitchy, small
athletes.
Just straight up athletes. You're right. Like track stars kinda.
Here's a couple of routes. Just know these really well and be ready.
So it sucks for Wandale that he missed half of a season to an ACL. I think he also missed one in college. But nevertheless, like, you know, the time is what it is. He is replaceable if he is not picking up the NFL game to its fullest extent. To be a reliable, like, number two guy by the end of his rookie year. Like, it's not like guys like him are totally irreplaceable now from a traits perspective. So, like I said, build around lowercase letters or whatever.
Yeah, with reassessment you know, next year and going forward.
Right, yeah. Next is Jalin Hyatt, signed through 2026. I have to put this in like a build around, same way Wandell Robinson, kind of a wasted first year. I will say that he did show some things that I was hoping to see, such as just like a little bit of variation to routes and stuff like that. Like, he wasn't strictly a running flies wide receiver. He was a mostly running flies receiver, but we were mostly a broken offense. So it doesn't really matter when I say that.
I don't consider it a wasted year for him. I think he kind of showed, this is kind of the progression I kind of expected from him.
Sure. It's kind of like a preseason dry run year for him.
Yeah. You know, we saw the flashes of what this could be if he hits the upper echelon of that range of what he think he can do. And then we saw some of those things that said, all right, you know, maybe, you know, give him another year, another offseason, another, you know, and then obviously, you know, building chemistry with a quarterback, you know, and all the other things around it that, you know, he'll mature and he'll, and I don't mean mature being he's immature, but he'll kind of develop more into, you know, a potential wide receiver too. And again, he's still very young. Some guys, you know, right off the bat are, this guy's going to be a bust. And this guy is, I think the future is bright with a guy like him. So I have him in the same boat as Wandell, as build around with a lowercase b in pencil.
Yeah, I think that him and Wandell are similar in their paths with this regime, right? Like, they are the kind of pieces that they wanted to add to the offense. Both like a scat kind of guy and like a scat back kind of guy, and then like a straight line runner to take the top off of the defense. That's really what they were looking to add. If these guys don't end up being the guys, then they don't end up being the guys. But for now, they think they will be, so they're going to build around them.
And they weren't extremely expensive either. I mean, none of them were first round picks.
Second round pick and a third round pick.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not first round picks or not free agents. We didn't trade draft capital to get them. It's like you take a flyer on these guys. You see the raw numbers like on the tape and on the combine, and you take a flyer on them and you see, you know, an educated flyer. You're going in the second round. You're not just, you know, hoping a prayer with somebody. But, you know, if guys like them last, you know, through the length of their rookie deals and we resign to a second deal, then it's their success stories.
Right.
And I think both of them are on that path to being that success story.
I mean, that was kind of the biggest problem with this franchise. For a huge stretch of time, we weren't signing guys to second deals.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Next guy on the list, Isaiah Hodgins. On a one-year deal, he re-signed with the team this year. It's like about $1 million. I think that Isaiah, I was actually asked privately in a text from a fan from another team, once Isaiah Hodgins became a free agent, what I thought of him. And he's going to, I think, always in his career be the unsung hero. I think that's just going to be his life. I think that as much as Darius Slayton is like a perfect number three, I think that Isaiah Hodgins is a perfect number four. That's, as this league becomes more and more dependent on depth and we keep playing 17 weeks, 18 weeks, 19 weeks, 15 preseason games, a whole playoff series with an extra wild card built in, depth becomes more and more important. And your number four going in there and being a number three when you need him to be a number three is super important. You know, this is the argument that we have every roster cutdown day, is we're arguing 100%. Over those last wide receivers. But the fact remains, if it's not even an argument, it's clear that this guy is the best wide receiver for, that's the best thing you can hope for. So, I mean, he's a good for now. I think that those guys are really hard to find. He's not worth more than the million or whatever he's getting paid. So it's not a matter of money. It's just, it's hard to find guys like this, I think.
Yep. That's exactly why he's a good for now. It's like, you know, I don't have anybody better. I don't really see one on the horizon right now. I don't, and that's, and again, we're looking at a guy who's a wide receiver for, you know, it's hard to upgrade the wide receiver four. It's just like, if this guy works, you keep him. And that's it. If we draft and some guy is out who really shines in training camp and beats him out for it, good. He beat him. He gets it. But if we have to roll into the season with him, I'm completely fine with it. That's definition to me of good for now.
Yeah, I mean, like, him
he's
schooling.
He's good for now.
Yeah. But I mean, him schooling Patrick Peterson in Minnesota, I mean, that is not to be taken lightly. Like, this is an NFL player. Like, just because I say he's a perfect wide receiver four, I don't mean that in, like, any kind of shameful way. Like, he's a guy who was wide receiver one when we needed him to be wide receiver
one. When we say a perfect wide receiver four, we're talking about, again,
an NFL talent.
A playoff caliber team where, yeah, if I'm slotting, this is clearly our franchise wide receiver one. This is the Robin to the Batman, who's wide receiver two. We have the shifty guy at three, and we need a fourth guy who's going to, sometimes in four wide receiver sets, he's the first guy off the bench for depth. That guy.
Mm-hmm. Isaiah Hodgins, he's never going to be the kind of guy that, when we're talking grand plans for this team, you know, like, oh, if they could just add this piece, you know, they'd be sick, this offense or whatever. He's never going to be the guy that we're talking about or, like, honing in on. Like, we just need to make sure that we solidify Hodgins comes back or anything like that. But in all honesty, I can see a scenario in which Hodgins is back next year. I'm like,
sure. I mean,
he's still going to be useful. I don't know how much exposure that he's going to get to the league, where he's going to have a whole bunch of free agency offers or anything like that. He seems to have, like, a clearly good relationship with Dabes. So, like, I mean, I could see him just coming back. I could see it happening. And he would still be good for now.
But I also feel he's one of those guys where Giant fans might inflate his overall value in the league relative to the average analyst or fan, too.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. The Giants also signed Isaiah McKenzie this year to a one-year deal. This is good for now, but I think that this is really smart move. This is like the Cole Beasley signing, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is getting a guy familiar with Dable's offense to be the Wandale backup.
Right. And see if he sticks once you get to the regular season.
Well, I think in this scenario, he's going to stick. So when we went into... So I think a lot of people thought of it maybe as like a miscalculation of risk assessment last year when they had Wandale Robinson, Sterling Shepard, Cole Beasley. Like, they had all these guys for the slot position and backup slot position and all that stuff. And they didn't really need it. Like, Wandale didn't have any trouble, I don't think, coming back from injury. And they just really didn't need Cole Beasley to come back. And Sterling Shepard didn't really even play.
Right. I
think that was the correct pathway, because, like, Cole Beasley wasn't really on the active roster for most of it. He was kind of like a guy who got reps. You were sure that he was still in game shape. You knew he still knew the offense. He knew the differences in language that have changed or whatever. And, you know, if Wandale goes down and you're just stuck with Sterling Shepard, Cole Beasley is a phone call away. I think that was still the right assessment. It was just the best case scenario of not needing them.
Well, let's go back to this time last year. Were we even positive Wandale would be ready for week one?
No, we were sure he wasn't going to be ready for week one.
Exactly. So
too late.
Exactly. So, I mean, you put yourself, it was the right move to make at that time, because you didn't know if he was going to be back for week two or six or who knows when. So I think they did the right game preparation for the start of the season. Although I deep down never thought that Cole Beasley would be a really a part of this rotation or even part of the team for very long. I thought it was one of those, okay, we're bringing him in, we're going to take a flyer, we're going to see what happens. You know, he might be training camp depth. He might maybe be an inactive guy, but I didn't think personally he was going to have much of a role on this team.
No. And like I said, like, I think his role was really to be a phone call away.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Isaiah McKenzie, like, getting Isaiah McKenzie, this is another guy that's just like that, where he's familiar with Dabes and shit. I think that this is smart that they're getting out ahead of it early this year, mm-hmm, because they don't have a lot of free agency money. And that was pretty much Isaiah McKenzie, Isaiah Hodgins, and the next guy I'm going to talk about is pretty much all the wide receiver money they had and spent. So,
yeah,
it's cool that they went out, they identified a possible guy, like, right away. They got that covered. They can just look at the draft now. I mean, they're pretty much done with free agency at this point.
I would think so, yeah.
Next guy is Gunnar Olszewski, and he's not really even a wide receiver, but I guess worth just bringing up in case, because I didn't think we'd have to talk about Tommy DeVito so much last year. So, point being is that as of right now, he is an emergency player because he will be active on game day as long as he's returning kicks and punts, which means, you know, it doesn't really matter who's on the roster. It's who's got a jersey on game day. So... I don't really know about anything as a wide receiver. Do you?
Yeah, no, but I mean, just to your point, this team has been so snake bit with injuries over the past couple of years. Would it ever really shock you that if we're at week 13 and he's pressed into service, if not a starting wide receiver, but someone who's in the rotation in the game, not at all. So,
no, not you know, at all.
Having a special teams guy who can, if necessary, run some routes is, you know, it's a bonus that, you know, may come into play.
I am glad. The only reason I really threw him in here, other than that, was I'm glad that they just went out and signed him. Like, mm-hmm. Again, you know, I don't know why it took so many injuries and failures at the returner position for them to just take it seriously enough to get a guy who is a specialist and sign him. Like, I don't know why that they. I don't know that you're really saving a roster spot. I don't think that you're getting any advantage by forcing somebody else to do something that they're not good at and don't do. You know what I mean? Make sense.
This is my theory. And I think because the rules are changing more and more to de-emphasize special teams, coaches and general managers are over the top de-emphasizing special teams.
But it is over the top, because there's one thing that is true about special teams. No matter how many times they change the rules, you can't have a turnover.
Right.
It's I don't know why. Like, all this fucking around has gotten us turnovers and injuries to starters. I don't see how the payoff is there. Like, we're talking about a small deal for $1 million to guarantee that the guy does the one thing that he's good at.
This is before we're talking about wide receivers, like, we have a bunch of guys, nothing great. Well, this is the one area of the game and area of the team you just want a guy. It's almost like I don't talk about the refs until they fuck up. You know, that means if I don't have to talk about them, they're doing their job. And I feel that's kind of what you want for this. We don't need Devin Hester.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
We don't need, you know, Tom Dempsey kicking 64-yard field goals. We just need somebody to not give the other team an extra possession deep in our territory. That's a win. And I think sometimes we just overthink things, you know, coaches and general managers and stuff, where it's like, take care of this little thing, lock it down, and it's going to save a lot of problems in a game situation.
Yes. My God. And like I said, this is a good for now guy. I'm not super stoked that Gunnar Olszewski is our returner. He's not like you said, he's not Devin Hester, but I don't need that. I just need the assurance that the guy back there knows what he's doing and isn't, you know, letting something bounce or fair catching inside the 10 or, you know, some stupid shit.
We have a big unknown right now with the rules going forward, you know, with kickoff returns. We just don't know how it's going to play out. You know, it's a pretty radical change what's going on.
It is.
And until we kind of get any sense of, you know, does the kickoff return become a weapon again? Like, it kind of feels like the pendulum's shifting that they want and trying to encourage kickoff returns by making him safer in this whole new thing. You know, we don't know. And it'll be interesting to see if we're going to be on the forefront of being taking advantage of these new rules or laying back and just being safe. But until we understand what we're going to be doing and what the rest of the league is doing as well, let's just get a guy right now who has pretty good hands and is smart. We'll worry about making this a schematic advantage or an advantage later on down the road.
Yeah, I don't need to be scoring touchdowns on punt returns right now. Just need to not fumble. Start there.
Exactly. Yes.
Couple guys with contracts expiring between last year and this year. Paris Campbell, absolute move on. This was an experiment of all experiments. He was the kind of guy that was going to be like I think part of that over. Emphasis on the slot position. Mm-hmm. But I think they really had expectations for Paris Campbell, whereas like Sterling Shepard and Cole Beasley were sort of insurance policies, you know, up there in age, Sterling Shepard with a ton of injuries over his career. Paris Campbell, I think they really thought was going to be a part of this offense. I just don't think Paris Campbell's very good.
Yeah, that's kind of... You took a shot, a low-cost shot, didn't work, you move on. Fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, the contract was structured perfectly for this. So it's not like a huge loss, but he was a pretty clear move on. He was barely even playing by the end of the year. They moved on. So no harm, no foul. I was cool with the signing. but whatever. And finally, Sterling Shepard. Rather than move on, I'm just putting hang it up. It's just time.
It's time. I thought it was time last year, and it's time.
They sort of gave him like a sympathy year, it feels like.
Yeah, and that's fine. But, you know, we move on. I mean, do we have this conversation already? I mean, what do we put him in giant lore? I mean, is he Ring of Honor worthy or any of that?
No, I mean, like, as a player, he could have been. It has nothing to do with, like, he wasn't good enough to be Ring of Honor. I think he was just on a stretch of really bad teams. Mm-hmm. Like, you put him on the 2011 roster, and, I mean, he's more productive than Manningham.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, he didn't play during a time where this team won the Super Bowls and won Super Bowls.
He played at the tail end of Eli Manning's career with nothing but bad offensive line play his entire time here. But, like, every time he was asked to do something, he did it well. You know, he's a value blocker. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't here at the right time to get in the Ring of Honor, I think. But everything about him statistically, I think he's probably good enough. You know, the injuries, had they not happened, I think talent-wise, he definitely, the statistics would make up for whatever is deficient. And he's generally viewed as a good guy. He's a giant for his entire career. Everything else fits. It was just, he was on bad teams.
Giant fans who remember back in the early 90s, Mark Ingram, he's Mark Ingram. Good receiver, decent. Not a Ring of Honor guy, not a retired number, not a Hall of Famer, not anyone that, you know, you're going to bounce your grandkids on your knee and say, I remember seeing Mark Ingram play, but he was a solid guy, you know, who did his time here and did well, and we kind of move on. And sometimes like, oh yeah, remember him? That's going to be him.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, like I said, just timing. Like, I think he had all the talent in the world. I mean, if he were on one of the better teams, I think that we'd have memories of him making great catches and, you know, taking some stuff to the house and you know, winning some like 2-point conversions in the red zone. You know what I mean? Like, he had all the talent to do that. He just didn't have the opportunities because he was either hurt or the team sucked. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I don't put his career as disappointing. I think it's just kind of like he had a decent career. I mean, it's just disappointing, like, to your point of he wasn't around to really.
For legacy purposes, it's disappointing, but for life, for a career, it's a great career. Yeah.
He had a nice career.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, hats off to Sterling Shepard. Happy you were here. Glad you stayed a Giant this whole time. Hope retirement is great for you. And you heal up, whatever.
Sounds like a guy that's going to be, you know, one of those Giants who, you know, there's visit this Giant at Burger King and it's going to be, you know, Sterling Shepard.
I think that he'll be at the preseason, training camp practices and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's exactly what I mean. A guy who's going to be associated with the Giants and do like the public relations things and do the tours and be like that guy who comes into your suite and says hi. You know, you can get his autograph before a game. That type of person.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So with that being said, this wide receiver group stinks. We have not named a number one. We've named, like you have said, like two number twos, number three and number four. And then we've got like some depth. That's kind of it. This is a mess. Been a solid point. You know, we've also brought up free agency is pretty much done for this team for this year. It is a fair point to say that at picking at six, all of the quarterbacks worth getting are gone. And I think it is a very realistic thing to have the conversation of, do you take a wide receiver one there? And before I wax poetically about guys to consider and my thoughts, I really want to know yours because this is a bad team that you and I have been watching for a very long time together. and I want your perspective. I want Governor Cranky here to build back better here. Tell me what you think.
My fellow Giant fans out there in Giant Land. I come to you with this.
I love when I ramble into your presentations like this.
Thank you so much. I mean, the segue game is top notch. I will have you on my cabinet as the vice secretary of. This team needs a lot, and this team needs a lot of top end talent. And, you know, the thing I always keep telling myself is all the problems don't have to be fixed in this year's draft, this year's free agency, this year's offseason. You know, we have a quarterback. We have Daniel Jones. And if you may hate his guts, you may think it's the worst trade ever, signing ever. You might think it was the worst draft pick ever. You may not like anything about him. But the fact is, at some point pretty early in the season, he's going to be back. And we have a starting quarterback that is above that lower tier of the shitty starters. Now, that doesn't say much. That shouldn't make you go to sleep tonight with a stiffy, but it's something. And so that doesn't mean we have an urgent need to blow our draft capital, you know, for this year and next year to get that guy right now. I mean, the odds of getting I you can talk about, you know, the quarterbacks in your analysis and all your videos and everything, and you've been all over the place discussing the draft. To my naked eyes, this is not the greatest quarterback class, and I don't see anybody that I would be trading up for to get that guy. My guy isn't in this class this year. So, you know, are you happy satisfying yourself with, you know, it could be like the fourth or third or fourth quarterback in this thing, or do you try to get a cornerstone, a true wide receiver one, somebody that when the time is right and we get that right quarterback is going to instantly make that quarterback better? And to me, I am on the wide receiver train for it. You know, if we were drafting third or we were drafting second, I would have a different tune I'd be singing. But if I'm just going to be drafting somebody, like, I'm not a big fan of J.J. McCarthy. I know the story with Penix and how old he is and in the injury history and everything. And it's too many question marks for me that with so many other needs on this team and needs, we need players. We need position one and wide receiver. This is an opportunity to get a wide receiver one. We are in a position based on how this draft kind of flows of getting the most sought after wide receiver in this. And we're not going to be very often in that position to be drafting the best at something that we can get in such a premium position in this league. So I am on the wide receiver train for this team. I'm going to leave it to you to give me the options of, you know, who you think the best is and everything. But to me, because I am not this year or bust or this year, or we get demoted to the second division like in soccer, I think we go wide receiver.
I find it interesting for you to say that you do not think that this is the best year for quarterbacks in the draft. But nevertheless, I think that you have like a solid point. Now, go ahead.
My point being of, you know, where we are drafting. Like, we're, you know, if we were drafting one or two, it's a different story. But to me, even one or two, I don't see the upside in giving up the haul that'd probably be needed to go up and get quarterback one or two. I just don't. There'll probably be decent quarterbacks. You know, there'll be probably a hit rate of 50%. Then we'll be good. 50% will be busted, and all like usual. But I just don't see that guy out there. It's like, I got to blow my load for this guy. You know, I don't see that I got to trade up for Eli Manning. I don't see that where at six, I'm going to get that guy. So that's kind of where I'm coming from this.
No,
this is not the class of 83. This is not the class of, you know, some of these other years.
I don't know anything. But I have this feeling that in the last couple weeks, and this is smokescreen season, but I do think that winds shift sometimes in the direction of, like, the truth, right? Like, finding out draft day morning that the Browns were going to select Baker Mayfield was a shift that didn't feel like nonsense. It was very succinct, to the point, you know, whatever. I think that a lot of I get this feeling now that this is really a 1-2 quarterback draft between Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. And this might be maybe my bias because I like Jaden Daniels a lot. But a lot of people have been really down on Drake May in the last couple weeks, or at least up and down on him. There's been some questions about his ability. Michael Penix has gotten like a huge boost since his pro day, which also, you know, like his raw ability was never the problem. It was always injury history and his age. You know what I mean? Like, I already knew that he could run and throw. That was not the question.
And there's quarterbacks, guys like Anthony Richardson, where you knew wherever they were starting out at, once they go through their pro day, once they go through Indy, once they go through all that stuff, you knew their stock was going to rise. And Penix, to me, once you get past, you know, the last game you saw and you get past the narrative of the injuries and get past the age and all that stuff, you knew he was going to rise, and it always happens.
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, there's nothing he can do to prove anything with injuries in an offseason where he's already healthy. So, like, the questions start to vanish and the glamour starts to shine a little bit more. And it's just, I get this feeling that Drake May is really that third guy. And I honestly think that he's a good prospect that somebody else is going to trade up for. You know, if he becomes, if for whatever reason he doesn't go with three to New England because they like McCarthy more, you know, that wouldn't shock me. Just because I don't know, it's New England and it's weird.
I'll have a bold statement. You can bookmark this for 6 years down the road. If you put a gun to my head, the guy who will have the best career out of this draft, the longest best career, I think is going to be Drake May.
Okay, interesting.
I this is the smell test for me. The eye test says that, you know, he's got the body, he's got the arm, he's got, you know, he seems like a smart guy. He just seems like a guy that I think there'll be a little less pressure on him than some of these other guys. And I just think he might end up in the right position or in the right team, in the right situation that he can be successful.
I think that's the thing, is that like all the things that he kind of stinks at are really just like, dude, just work on this and you're golden. Everybody else is like, man, you're an athletic freak and you can do things I've never seen before, but you're not really great at playing quarterback. You got to work on that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm oversimplifying, of course, but like, it's just the causality is reversed. Drake May is a good quarterback that needs to work on getting better at it. These other, like every other college player going to the pros should be, right?
Right. And you know how it works too. If you're the flavor of the month in August, by the time it's, you know, March and April, you're yesterday's news. Mm. There's nothing new and exciting about you, even though everything is kind of the same as it was. And I think that's definitely the case for him. Like when we talked, I remember getting ready to watch that North Carolina, South Carolina game. I was in Vegas. And it was just like, I was watching that game for two reasons. One is, you know, this guy might be, you know, the first pick in the draft or second to pick in the draft. And obviously, how is this team going to do against Florida State later on down the line? But it was definitely I'm watching this guy and you know, you listen to watch this show, you know that Grump and I watch college differently. Hmm. Grump watches for prospects. I watch for, you know, how does it affect Florida? And, you know, that game I was actually watching to be like, okay, let me see what this guy really is. First time I'm really watching him, because I think he's going to be number one or number two pick in the draft. So,
yeah, you know, I don't really remember what I was going to say about that.
All right.
But yeah, I could see that happening. Nevertheless, I agree with you in that I just don't think that, like, the 1-2 guys in this, I think there's going to be two guys out of this draft. I do think that that's true. And you know, I'm on record already saying that of the top four guys, there's flaws with all of them. Like, there, I see a pathway of failure for all four of them. So, like, yeah, there's that too. I mean, that's the draft, right? Like, they're college players. There's always a gamble.
Hey, I can also see Bo Nix being a 15-year backup in this league and having a very successful career.
Yeah, the next too. Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Exactly. I could certainly see that from a guy like Bo Nix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The more solid players at the top end of this draft and some of the best players in this draft are guys like Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze. They are very solid at their position. I have very few questions. I have no questions. I have little things I would like to see, you know, maybe get better or see less of in the next level. I can't say the same thing for the top quarterbacks. Like, I have extensive things to bitch about for all of them. And, you know, I can certainly see a scenario. Well, look, I think I've been consistent on this, and what I want to happen is Brian Daboll is an offensive NFL head coach, a very successful NFL offensive coordinator. He has molded Josh Allen. He has gotten the most, I think, out of Daniel Jones, really, that we've seen. He's gotten certainly the most out of Tommy DeVito, far more than I ever could have imagined could be squeezed out of him in his first year. If Brian Daboll likes one of these quarterbacks and he wants one, I defer to that, right? Like, who the hell am I to argue with any of that? That being said, if Brian Daboll doesn't like one of these quarterbacks, the three guys I named before, Harrison, Neighbors, Adunzi, these are the guys you should be looking at, seriously.
And you can bookmark this because this will be a guaranteed lock. Whenever that pick is made, I am not going to be like, oh, they took a wide receiver, or oh, they took a quarterback, exactly for the reason you just said, is that Brian Daboll now, not only from his past track record, he's been with this team long enough. He knows what he has in this locker room.
Right.
He knows what Daniel Jones is from the neck up as much as he does with his arm and his legs and his knee and all this stuff. And he knows this offensive line better than anybody else does. And he knows, you know, he also knows that he no longer has, you know, carte blanche to build this team as long as he wants to. That was a splash of cold water in his face last year. His fault or not, it doesn't matter. This is New York. This is a very demanding fan base, a very demanding media base. For year one was great. You just keep doing what you're doing. We'll check in with you next year. You have a season in the pijadu like we did. The heat's going to be on. So he has to start kind of evaluating all these things. So that's a very long-winded way to say I agree with you, Grump, that if one of those quarterbacks is not there, not going to force it just to get a quarterback because, you know, the fans are sick of Daniel Jones or the media keeps saying he's a bust. They're not just going to replace it. It has to be, you know, an upgrade, something they truly feel is an upgrade for the long term.
Yeah. And look, I've already said this too. This is kind of devolving into draft talk as we talk a little about pick six. So really quick, before I run the car off the road into that direction, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, these guys are kind of all the same in that they are bona fide number ones. I personally think I might have Neighbors above Marvin Harrison Jr., but I think someone could convince me there. My gut tells me not to get too in love with a singular prospect. Because, like, you know, you had the quarterback matchup with the wide receiver at LSU. You didn't have the same thing at Ohio State. So some of the tape just looks a little bit more impressive because it's just fun to watch. Nevertheless, I do think that there's like some interchangeability, but like these are wide receivers like we do not have on the roster. These are not subbing in for anything. They are instantly more talented than everybody else we have, correct?
They're wide receiver ones on day one, basically.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. Let me turn this around a little bit. Are any of these wide receivers guys that you would consider trading up a pick to make sure you get them based on our situation?
No, I don't think so, because I think that putting my reality check hat on, there are going to be quarterbacks in this draft that the Giants like and quarterbacks they don't like. So what I was going to say was, you know, no, because one of these wide receivers going early only means that one of those quarterbacks falls, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And each time one of these wide receivers, so like, personally, like I just said, Neighbors and Harrison, I almost feel like you can flip-flop them. So if one of them goes, getting the other one is just as good. But that also means
let's play the game. Yeah, let's play the game that quarterback 1, 2, 3, 4, the first four picks are quarterbacks, and number five is out there, and Giants love Harrison. They're like, I want this guy. Is there enough of a – you think there's enough of a separation between those two that they would trade if they would just say, okay, whatever – we'll take the guy that's not picked and we'll be happy with that.
Personally, I don't think there's enough separation there. Gotcha. I think fundamentally, let's look at it from like a financial point of view, right? No, like in that draft picks are assets. Fundamentally, both of these guys enhance your team relatively the same amount. The cost to move up one spot is not relatively anything. It is expensive. Mm. Right. It just doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? So what they do for you as a team, even if the difference between them is more than I'm letting on, what they do for this team, how they improve this team is virtually the same.
Well, it's actually the opposite. It's just like if you just stick at six, you're paying a lot. You're paying less for that. Someone slotted six and you do it five.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So then here's the other thing. I've also been a vocal proponent of the fact that this offense stinks.
Wow.
It's
breaking news.
It has been not a joy to watch them fail to put 28 or more points up on the board consistently for the better part of a decade. And I've been pretty vocal that, like, you know what I mean? Like, improve the offense. Like, I don't care if the defense suffers all year. I don't care if we lose every game as long as we're scoring points on offense. The defense can be fixed relatively quickly. The offense, you have to establish an identity, a playbook. It has to be unstoppable. You have to have talent. Everyone has to be, like, the quarterback and coach and offensive coordinator have to be of the same mind. It takes so much more to build that. I don't think you really need to build the defense the same way, especially not the way the rules are now. I think you could say to me, well, I mean, if you were to ask me, like, okay, no wide receivers, no quarterbacks, or let's say that the best wide receivers are gone and only the quarterbacks you don't like are there, would you take, you know, an offensive lineman? Right? I mean, that's like a logical, no, not really. I just don't think so.
You think you start thinking about trading down, yeah, getting more assets.
I think that you could maybe persuade me, maybe, that Brock Bowers at six, you know, is the move in the weirdest circumstances of the best wide receivers are gone, only the quarterbacks you don't like are there. I think more likely scenario is you just trade down at that point. Someone wants somebody up there, I think. And then you start getting more assets.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where I flip the question to you. Let's say it's quarterback at six. The right series of events happens. They get the guy they wanted at six. Now you're picking in day two. Day two, I will throw out a couple names. Troy Franklin from Oregon, Ladd McConkey from Georgia, Xavier Worthy from Texas, Ricky Pearsall, Arizona and Florida. Arizona or Arizona State? Arizona.
We're going to Arizona State.
Oh, is it State?
Yeah.
Okay.
Arizona State, yeah. They also had what's his name? That big fucker who went to Florida State also. They had both of those guys at Arizona State.
Johnny
both
Wilson?
Went, yep.
Yeah.
And then they both transferred out.
Xavier Leggett. These are guys I would say are day two guys, by my estimation. They may go before that in day one. I think talent-wise, they're day two guys. But they're all very good wide receivers.
Yes.
Do you see where I'm going with this question? Would you go? Yeah, okay.
Sure.
You would put, you're okay. Basically, you know, I'm only asking this question because we had a whole segment about how, you know, oh, we got a bunch of twos. These guys are less clear ones.
I got to be very honest with you. You said we have a bunch of twos. Okay. I said we had a bunch of guys.
Yeah,
some of them might be a two. So to me, if I'm picking up a solid two, and again, I saw Pearsall every snap. I saw Leggett. I saw McConkey in my own two eyes three times, you know, play. These are solid, solid receivers. These have more, you know, they could – with the roster we have right now, any one of those three guys could almost be a wide receiver one.
Right.
Now, the expectation is they would not be wide receiver one throughout the course of their career with the Giants. We continue to upgrade the position through, you know, drafting again through free agency and stuff. But if you're building a good wide receiver room, you got to start somewhere. And it doesn't have to – you don't have to start the build with the best guy and work your way down. You can build that, you know, solid game-playing guy and, you know, having an ongoing thing.
Well, listen, here's the thing. I mean, you took all the words right out of my mouth. You answered that question as if I had set it up with you.
We don't do prep on this show, at least.
No, and I honestly thought of the question halfway through the episode. So, but here's the other thing. So he's a solid two, okay, and maybe you didn't address the wide receiver one problem. You still got that. Darius Slayton is only signed through this year. Mm-hmm. You have to replace. You want your number two to be a solid number two and not an aging number two. Sounds like we're talking about poop.
Yeah, but you're also shopping in the day two bin. So day two bin is not going to have many, Gucci bags in there. They're going to have a lot of, nice bags. But, the Michael Kors bag will be in there, but not that many Gucci's. It's okay. You're drafting for value. You're drafting for the value of your pick.
That being said, I'm going to say a couple quick words on some of those guys I mentioned. Okay. Ricky Pearsall is criminally underrated. I'm not saying that because he's a Florida guy, and I'm not saying it to you because you're a Florida guy. Ricky Pearsall, I mean, even just looking at his combine numbers, blew other people out of the water. He is an incredibly impressive route runner. He gets incredibly vertical. He's a competitor, a contested catch champion. He's got strong hands. That is a very underrated guy. He just doesn't generate a lot of buzz for whatever reason. I guess maybe the quarterback play at Florida didn't really help him.
Well, I mean, Florida's a bad team. I mean, they had a deal. Anthony Richardson for the pro potential that he was. Anthony Richardson, when he played at Florida, was a pro potential guy. It's a, wow, look at that arm strength. Look, it's like it was almost watching 12 games of the combine of like projecting what he could do as opposed to. Well, he kind of sucked in this game. He was kind of like 15 for 33, and he gets seven catches in a row, and then he missed nine in a row type of thing. But, and then last year it was a very condensed offense. We didn't take many shots downfield. The offensive line wasn't nearly as good, and the defense, put them in bad positions also. And so it's just like it was a lot of things around it. I'm a little surprised he didn't have more buzz because he had – a couple of catches.
Oh, he had a great catch during the year.
I know this is a Giants show and just Giants and everything, but the best catch I've ever seen in person, better than the OBJ catch, was Pearsall's catch this year. Watch that on film. And it's just like, and just the angle of it was coming right at me. It's like, how the fuck did he catch that? So, I mean, he can make the spectacular. He also makes the steady. And if you could do a combination of both, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I think, honestly, he's probably underrated because the production at college just wasn't there. But that was through no fault of his. And, other guys like Ladd McConkey. I'm not trying to be down on Ladd McConkey. I think I actually have McConkey rated higher than Pearsall. I think that McConkey's going to be deadly as a route runner in the red zone. There's just so many people talking about it. There's one guy comparing Ladd McConkey to Cooper Kupp at the Senior Bowl. I mean, that's the place for hyperbole in that. But, I mean, Ricky Pearsall should be a name that, people mostly paying attention to the draft are aware of. And I think, casual draft people, might not even know him. That might have been the stupidest sentence I ever said, but...
Yeah, oh, I think we've had a lot of them.
Yep.
McConkey is just one of those technically good route runners. Like, he's just open, not because he makes great moves, it's just he runs a really good route. There's a difference between physically better than your corner or your defender against you, and you just knowing where to be.
Well, yeah, one is raw ability versus just practice. The work was, but you can tell with McConkey the work's been put in.
Mm-hmm. And remember, that's impressive because Georgia had so much talent that they can kick anybody's ass by just rolling out of bed, getting ready, and playing. So if you're a guy on a team like that with all the weapons they've had, all of this, these running backs in the NFL, a little shit quarterback that, won how many SECs and national championships. Receivers in the NFL, but a guy like him who just learned his craft and did his craft and studied it and practiced and did his reps and did the work, that tells you something.
Yeah. That's all I got for this episode of the show.
That's the last time I'll ever say nice things about a Georgia guy, too. So if I'm saying that, it must mean there's something that stood out to him.
I'll clip this for the next time you give a compliment to Andrew Thomas. Or does that not count anymore?
Well, you know.
All right.
I'll take the fifth. You get a little, everybody deserves a second chance in life. If you become a Giant, that washes away some of your sins, but he'll always be a Bulldog.
I remember this, like he chose at like 18 years old to go to a school. As a man and as an adult, he chose to re-sign with the New York Giants. Think of it that way. This is a man who grew. That's a man who learned.
Wow. Thank you, Andrew Thomas, agent, for joining the show tonight.
I was trying to do you a favor for having weird college biases. All right. That's it for this episode. We will see you guys next week. I don't remember what position group is next. Is it
corners?
I think it's outside corners. Yeah.
We have cornerbacks. I think that's all we have left to do.
Corners and then running backs. So we are very, very, very close to – oh, and linebackers. Like yes, off-ball yes. linebackers. So we got three more position groups, three more weeks. The draft is right around the corner. We're making our way through the middle of April by next episode.
You know, in 3 weeks left, that reminds me. It's 3 weeks before my anniversary. I guess I should go out there and go
get
gift shopping.
Together, yeah.
Good thing Cranky Wife doesn't listen to the show.
So amazing that you have like a sports calendar built into that as a reminder.
Well, we got married on the day of the draft in 2007.
And I know you well enough to know that was intentional.
That was very intentional. And it was especially intentional because we didn't have a first-round pick that year. So it worked out even better.
All right, everyone. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @football_grump, @thecrankyfan, @justgiantspod. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Tell a friend. And, of course, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and...
And Grump, you were moonlighting this week too. Where were you?
That's right. I was on Thunder. I should have plugged that at the beginning.
Jesus.
I was on Thunder and Lightning with Dan, the man, the Behan.
Behan's the man.
Yeah.
Love the guy.
Nikki was on vacation, so I was asked to come in and fill. So we just did some draft talk there. So definitely check that out. That was a much more laid back kind of convert. Well, not that this wasn't laid back, but just a.
I'm half asleep already. We mean laid back, yeah.
But yeah, it was just a laid back conversation about draft stuff, and I had to give my food takes as well. So you know, I guess that's part of being on the show. Yep, I had to give food takes for what I would serve if I were hosting a football party.
Really?
Yes. So if you want my answer to that, check that out. I gave serious thought to that. You know, I gave an honest answer. So check that out. I'll put the link in the description below.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll see you guys next week. Until then, go Giants.
Go Giants.